Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder, and thanks for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And as always, I have a question for you. What does it mean to be a church-going hypocrite? When I was a church-going pastor, I worked hard to distinguish myself from those who said one thing and did another. I wanted the world to see that there was a different way to do the faith. There was, but I couldn't see it until I finally learned how to give without being a hypocrite. In today's post, we explore our charitable giving and expose the dirty secret that institutional religion doesn't want us to see. It turns out Jesus is no more impressed with our modern churches than he was with the temple. Join me now as we see beyond what motivates us to give and expose why we prefer the lesser reward of recognition to something more hidden. Hello, everybody. Thanks so much for coming back to yet another episode of Beyond Everything Radio. I am your host. My name is Kevin Winder. I like to serve the world as an online pastor, author, and uncoach, among many other things that I do, just like you. So glad that you're here. Welcome to this program. Welcome to the newsletter. If this is how you accessed it, thank you so much for signing up. Going to my website, www.kevinwinder.com. Sign up for Winder's Windshield. Get it every Sunday morning. And instead of you going to church, church comes to you. What a nice idea. Hey, folks, we are in the middle of a series, and I'm so glad that you are continuing with this. Many of you are giving me a lot of feedback about the Sermon on the Mount. It's the most popular sermon ever preached in the history of the world, and yet some of these ideas and concepts that I'm pulling out of here are not taught or have not been seen by so many of you. There's a reason for that. A lot of them are obscured by institutional religion. What does that mean? Well, today is a perfect example. Today in episode number 198, we are talking about giving, not performing. That's right. Podcast number 198, giving, not performing. And like I alluded to just a moment ago, this is not a sermon you're going to get every week. You're probably not going to get this at all from the community church. In fact, a lot of times I hear questions about, why don't you just start a church, Kev? Or why don't you join a church that has more alignment to the ideas that you have? And I'm sure there are those out there, certainly. But this is part of the reason why. When you have a church and you have to look out for its own best interest, you have to make sure you can pay for the parking lot repairs. You have to pay for the staff, the electricity, the insurance, the skinny jeaned worship pastor with a neck beard. You have to pay for your own, you know, everything else, right? It all kind of comes together, and then you have to watch what you say. You don't want to offend your core base. You don't want to really teach what it actually might be saying. And so you end up taking the scripture and you reframe it within a context that is palatable for the widest group of people. Now, a lot of pastors take pride and say, we just teach you the word no matter what. But no matter if they're supported in any way, if they take a dollar, if they take any money or support or resource from the institution from which they are trying to promote, then I assure you they are reframing this in a way that is serving the greater interest. Not that it's not helping you, but that there is that bias. You cannot get away from a hired gun who's teaching you the Bible. So that's a question to start with, and we'll get to that perhaps later. So let's get on with today's podcast. We are in the middle of the Sermon on the Mount. We are at that point where Jesus in chapter 6 begins by talking about our giving. And last week we concluded chapter 5 in the sermon. And chapter 6 begins with three passages which go together, just like we saw the few passages that went together last time. And Jesus is providing clear direction away from institutionalized religion. And he's providing direction into a very private faith. So I'm just going to say that slowly, carefully, deliberately, in hopes that it sinks into your heads. Please let it find its way into your heart. The message of Christ here is a clear direction away from institutionalized religion and toward a private faith. Now, I somehow missed this vital point when I was a brick-and-mortar pastor. I mean, this should be of huge interest to a very large portion of the world. I mean, if you're a churchgoer, think of all the people that don't go to church that you work with, that you have at softball games or football games or whatever, that your kids hang out with. Learning that Jesus is promoting people away from institutionalized religion and into a private faith should be something that other people who call themselves spiritual but not religious should be very, very interested in, right? Now, this is going to be a Bible study you will never hear from your local church. Why is that? Because I am an online pastor. I do not have an elder board I have to respond to. I have people who hold me in accountability, who check my work and let me know if they think my cheese is sliding off the cracker. But I don't take a dollar from any of you. I never have. And if I have my way, I never will. What I have here is a heart to share with you the teaching of Scripture and to reveal to you the gospel message that frees you from your institutional prisons or living hell. And the way that that comes out means that I have to teach it the way I think Jesus would have taught it. You have to hear it the way I think the original audience would have heard it. And if that's the case, and I do my work, then you're in for a shock today. This is why you could never hear this in a local church from a pastor who is a paid staff, a hired gun. And so, like I revealed in chapter 5, Jesus' sermon was probably not very popular many in the local crowd. And then if I'm true to the text today in chapter 6, it's not going to be any more widely received by the religious mind today than it was in chapter 5. And as you'll see, Jesus is not a fan of institutionalized religion. And so how do we get to this idea that Christianity needs to be some big alternative institutionalized religion? How did we get there? The fact that it exists at all means we have lost our way. And so I am here trying to invite all comers back to the faith that was started. See, in those who are embedded in the power structure of institutionalized religion are not fans of Jesus' subversive teaching. In fact, they are the ones that put him on the cross. Never forget, church and state hung Jesus on the cross. And so it's the modern religious mind that has to look at this, and they cannot escape a glaring and yet very fair critique of this weekly big show that we do. Now, I don't care if you're Muslim, Jewish, or Christian, if it's Friday, Saturday, or Sunday that you go to your mosque, temple, or church, there are far too many people who attend religious services thinking they are being righteous, they're doing the right thing, they're pleasing God. And some of them come across as holier than thou, right? I would never miss Sunday morning service and go skiing with those heathens, right? We've all heard it. They guilt you into, shame you for taking a vacation, for escaping with your family for the weekend, right? Jesus exposes this hypocrisy. He is beating it out today. You want to hear the words? Here they are. Out of Matthew chapter 6, verses 1 through 4. This is what Jesus said. He says, "Beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them. For then you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. Thus, when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may be praised by others. And truly, I say to you, they have received their reward. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret. And your Father, who sees in secret, will reward you." Now that is a frame shift passage. It is a barn burner. It is deconstructive, completely deconstructive. And the Greek word here that's recorded is poieo, right? And this means to make, to construct, to do, to work. And what he's saying when he's referring to our dikaiosunin, which is the term for righteousness, right? He's saying poieo means to perform. In other words, when you don't perform your righteousness, like don't make a performance art out of your righteousness, out of doing the right thing, out of being generous, out of giving, right? This is going to be seen over the next 3 weeks. They all go together. It's the same theme. It's just a different way of doing goodness into the world, right? One is giving to the needy. One is praying. One is fasting, right? We're starting with giving to the needy. And Jesus uses these three examples of righteous deeds to prove that true righteousness is not performance art. It's not supposed to be displayed in front of others. It's not about you getting recognition and appreciation and validation, right? It belongs in the, what he calls crypto, where we get our word crypto, the hidden. It belongs in the dark. It belongs hidden. Right, so consider how it must have felt for the original audience to hear Jesus repeatedly refer to the hypocrites in the synagogues. I mean, these are religious people. These are faithful people. They believe their Bible. They follow its rules. They do what it says. They believe God is listening. God cares about them more than everybody else, but certainly not the heathen, as they say. The heathens. We'll get to that next week. Right? I mean, just think about how they would have felt. This is to accurately and modernly contextualize this to this world today. Clearly, Jesus is talking about church-going hypocrites. Stop right there. Like, Jesus is taking on church-going, religious-minded hypocrites. Jesus is deconstructing the cultural container of doing righteousness, which is institutionalized religion, and trying to get us back to the heart of what it means to be righteous, which is a private, hidden faith, right? Now, for some people, the motivation for doing righteousness is the approval. It's the validation. It's the recognition of from others. In fact, that's really the motivation that we all have for everything. But what is Jesus saying about dressing in our fancy clothes? Why do so many people get all dressed up on Sunday? Is it because God is really impressed with nice clothes? I mean, certainly there are people in third world countries who wouldn't have a clean shirt to put on, and yet alone shoes. And so would their attendance in our building be offensive? I mean, why are we all duded up? What about our volunteering to serve? Why do we do it? Is it really because we want to make a difference in the world, or are we doing it because, well, we would like to have that spot on the committee? You know, we want to be recognized, right? What about writing our big checks? That's what really this passage is all about, our gift giving, you know? What about our giving of our time? Is this because, you know, we really want to self-empty? We have kenosis within our heart? We want to just give away our life? Or is it because we want to actually self-fill? This takes a high level of soul work to actually see the difference. I mean, do you just go along with the pressure of the crowd when the offering plate comes by? Think about how you feel if you don't have your check that week and the offering plate is coming by, right? Here it comes. Do you feel pressure to give? And then when you do you feel a sense of pride? Do you feel like, oh gosh, I'm so glad this week was the week I have my check? Or, you know, I pulled $5 out. I put something in just so that I could feel better about myself, right? Do you expect a receipt at the end of the year, right? I mean, if you write checks every week, or you give online, do you expect a statement that shows all of your giving at the end of the year? And then when you do, when you look at it, what do you feel? Do you feel a sense of pride? Do you feel good about yourself? I know I used to. So, do you need credit for your giving? If you are, Jesus is calling you a hypocrite, just like he did me. I am not off the hook here. Jesus reveals that giving like this is only giving to ourself. Selfish giving bears the reward only of vanity and acclaim. It means you've got your reward already, right? You feel nice and happy inside. That's as far as you're going to get. God is not behind your gift. God is not with you in that space. For some souls, that's more than enough, right? Socially, that's the huge reward. But what Jesus is getting at here is that spiritually, if you buy into the social big reward, you have a part of you that's dead inside. And when this truth began to dawn on me when working in the Sunday church delivery system, I was sorely dismayed at how predominant this kind of giving really was. I know that people do go through the motions and they do give from a pure heart. I know that many of you are out there who really honor God with your gift, but you do it into the traditional format. I'm not talking about that. I hope you see the difference. But how many of you would still give to the church if the church was no longer tax deductible? I mean, behind it is the heart that wants credit for being generous, right? You want to be seen by others. You want somebody in the church accounting office to say, hey, those guys gave a lot. I mean, is it any wonder that so many churches suffer lack? I mean, most churches can barely keep their lights on. Do you realize that? Very, very few churches can do anything for the city or for the world. So how long can you go to your church and give your money to others? The others around you in need before your church comes down on you. What happens if you pull back your giving on the Sunday big show and start allocating it towards those around you in need? What if you reallocated your tithe to the sphere around you who were in need? What do you think is going to happen? What are you afraid is going to happen? I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Kev, if this message is widely adopted, churches are going to suffer. They're going to close down. If they're barely getting by and a giver pulls out, that could be the end of the church. It's absolutely right. See, the correction here that Jesus is giving us is such that you have to give in such a way that you give no thought to the outcome, right? If you're worried about the outcome, if you're saying, if I don't give this, the church is going to suffer. If I leave this church, they're not going to make it because I know I am a big portion of the giving here, right? What you're doing is what Jesus is calling hypocrisy. He says, don't let your left hand know what the right hand is doing. He's saying, be completely moved by the impulse to give and then just give right where it's needed most. Don't give because it's your obligation. Remember, you have to get to the pure motivation of love. Don't give because you kind of have to. Because you don't have to give there. There's nothing that says you have to give it there. See, we've redefined the church as this big machine on the Sunday morning, big show, and all your money goes to all this stuff. But that's not what Jesus is saying. Giving is two or more gathered. I mean, church is two or more gathered together. And if you were to gather for coffee with a friend and you found they were in need, could you give your entire tithe to them? To help them, to bless them, to sustain them? Or would you be like, oh man, if I give this, the church is going to feel it? What are you talking about? The church is going to feel it. You are in church with your friend at coffee. That's church. And of course, they're going to feel it. They're going to be blessed, and so will you. But see, if your mind is saying, no, I have to support the institution, he's talking about your giving that should come from your heart is not going there. It's not coming from there. It's hypocritical. Our giving is to be in secret, on toy kruptoi, right? In the secret place, the hidden place, the darkness. That's the place where our giving should be. It should be done so that no one knows it came from you. Could you give all your money in such a way that you don't get recognition at the end of the year? What if you couldn't write it off from your taxes? Then is giving somehow less of a responsibility? See, give in such a way that you desire no credit, no acclaim, no recognition, no accolade for it. It matters nothing if there's a tax deduction. It should be enough that God sees. And that's the word they use, blepo, which means to look, to see. It's ongoing. It's inferred this ongoing. We saw this earlier in chapter 5 when he says if a man looks at a woman with lust in his heart, he's already committed adultery. He's using the word blepo, this ongoing, this looking, this staring, this I'm looking deeper than the surface, right? A man looking at a woman is going deeper than the surface of her clothing. That's blepo. And what he's saying here is God is looking at you deeper than the surface of your life. He looks into that deep, dark, secret place. He wants you to give from there. not from this outside external pressure that's coming from this institution, this noise. It's blocking out your signal to hear the secret voice and to receive the real reward that comes from inside. You're getting the outside one. It's totally tiny in comparison. See, the vital point here is that giving is a one-way personal compulsion of love, where God moves on your heart within that secret place, not a bi-directional corporate transaction. Modern religion, just like the synagogue in Jesus' day, tries to centralize control of everything. They want to centralize everybody's giving by having everybody give to the church, and then the church offers programs for the needy. That's the corporate model. That's what they did in the synagogue. Now, this corporate model is steeply embedded in the psyche and guilt reflex within our thinking. I mean, what would happen if people in the church followed Jesus' advice and rather than giving corporately, began to selflessly give to those in need within their spheres of influence? Well, you know exactly what's going to happen, don't you? Would the pastor have to just get a job like you? Would that be so bad if our pastors taught the gospel because it was something that was a beacon, a fire burning in their chest that they would do if nobody paid them to do it? How many of your pastors would actually go out and get a job and work alongside of you every day, 40, 50, 60 hours a week, raise their family, do all their stuff, and then come and serve the body? That's what I've always done, right? Would the building loan go into default? Would that be so bad? Do we need all these things? Would we lose the staff, the Jumbotron, and the coffee bar? Would that be so detrimental to the city? Right? Oh, yeah, it's our meeting place. Yeah, it's comfortable. Yeah, it's all these things. I get it. But you see, Jesus' model of the church would be totally fine if you never gave to the churchianity side of it anymore. The American model for churchianity would be in peril if you pull back your gift. See, when you give to the institution, it is always on display. It's like, why does the Bellagio look the way it looks? It's because people are gambling, losing their money. That's why it has so much money. Why does the church look the way it looks? Why do so many of them are so big and so fancy and so attractional and so, culturally relevant? You see, all that would be in peril, but Jesus modeled the church would be just fine. Now, do we want the Father who sees in secret to reward us in secret? Or do we want everyone in town to see what a success our religious project really is? Look at what a rock star our pastor is, what an ego this team has. Nobody can do what they're doing down there. Look at all the programs they have. Right? You just write your check and they take care of the rest. They're the pros. I mean, who are we trying to impress with all these buildings, this nice music, and all of our seeker-sensitive accoutrements, really? Are you really impressing God? See, it's only necessary if we're trying to impress people. Think about it. Well, I really want this place to be nice and inviting. I want you to come in and feel like we're at a coffee shop. I don't want the stranger from God to feel like they can't come into the church and be comfortable. So we have to impress you. We have to make it an environment that's attractional to you, right? All this is only necessary if you're trying to impress people, because God sees. And Jesus, by the way, is no more impressed with all of this than he was with the temple built by Solomon. And Solomon's temple, folks, was the cream of the crop. There is nothing ever built like Solomon's temple. And do you think Jesus was that interested in it? Destroy this temple, I'll rebuild it in 3 days. Obviously, he was talking about himself, but he didn't have any love lost for the grandeur of it. Sit with that for a minute, folks. Sit with it for a minute. Church as a business skims billions of dollars every year from citizens, with very little of it going back towards programs and services. Most charitable giving at churches pay for staff, pays for the building, insurance, music, parking lot repairs, etc. This shifts the burden of caring for the marginalized in our city to the government, and it increases the tax burden on citizens. So what would our cities look like if hundreds of billions of dollars were utilized to put towards the most in need instead of our religious ego projects? instead of trying to be the best church on the block, to make our religion stand out better than yours, right? At my last post in church ministry, during my stay there, my family gave away over $250,000 to the projects there. A fifth of that even went to a now defunct missionary fund that helped build an orphanage in Africa. It's not even being used right now. The rest of the money went to pay for staff and to our cool downtown historic building, and we thought we were being relevant and modern and hip and cool, and our message was fun and our music rocked, and I mean, it was all that stuff. And today, the building was sold, it's all gone. It's all been a big waste. Millions of dollars went through this small church over the years, and there is little to nothing to show for it. Oh, sure, you have some people who have transformed lives, a few. But how many more could have been transformed with those resources than, you know, hey, we kept this big old building going for so long? I mean, guess how many programs we had for the poor? Zero. How big was our non-existent food bank? It was non-existent. See, on the elder board, I was so proud to be a tither. I was even prouder that I could go beyond my 10%. I was giving so far beyond. Man, I felt so good about myself, felt magnanimous. And of course, as it is in almost all churches, and I've been in several, and it's the same for all of them, only the big givers are qualified for leadership. You have to be a consistent big giver if you want to lead the church. See, I believe this was the reason God blessed my income. Yeah, he just keeps giving me more. I keep getting all these new jobs and stuff keep coming my way. It must be because I keep giving to the church. Now, I was giving out of a heart that really did want to give back to God, as so many of you do. But I can tell you that all of that money is gone. It's wasted. For what? And when I left, I was afraid that perhaps the gravy train was going to end and that I'd lose my job or something, that, you know, the shoe was going to drop because now I'm not going to the church. Now I'm not going to be giving that way anymore. God must be probably going to stop the blessing. And when I stopped giving corporately, it was a short ride to leaving the church, right? I had these conclusions in my head. I'd been talking about them with the elder board, and I decided I'd pull back my financial giving. Of course, within a couple weeks, they're looking at you saying, what's wrong? Why aren't you in a good place? Why don't you support what we're doing? Well, obviously, if you don't support what we're doing, you can't be an elder. You can't serve here, blah, blah, blah. You can still be a member here. And then if you just come as a guest on a member, all of a sudden, literally, I'm not kidding you, within 2 weeks, my phone would not be answered if I called anybody. They saw my phone ringing. It would not be picked up. This is the reality of what you're giving to, folks, so often. This example that I went through is not a limited example. Most churches in the world operate this way. Right now, today, you know, after I left, I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to lose it all, and that's not at all what happened. I began giving in my sphere of influence from a heart, from a place where I didn't care if it was tax deductible. I didn't care if anybody saw. I just wanted to serve and give out of love. Well, my opportunities have abounded since. I can just tell you that. And today, my tax preparer has far less formal documentation of my giving, but we are 100% connected to the giving, and we can do it all in private. See, knowing that we give from a hidden place has allowed us to experience that true reward, God's presence. That's the reward we're talking about. So imagine that. Jesus was trying to free people into God by subverting corporate giving. Imagine that. Don't give to the temple. Don't give like that. If you want to give and help, fine, but don't do it where you're putting on a display. And folks, it's hard to lay any claim that you're giving to some big, you know, conglomerate, some big, you know, event isn't on display. The whole thing is about its display. And so you see, the reward for giving is not the giving, nor the recognition for the giving. The reward for giving within the hidden is that God sees, God blepos you. He sees below the surface. It's not having to prove anything to anyone with our giving. that means that it is no longer a performance. See, I've become free. But are you? Is your pastor free? Maybe it's time they go out and get a job like all of us. Knowing that God sees is all the reward I need. Perhaps this is the path to true righteousness. I think it is. I think that's what Jesus was getting at. This is what it means to be merciful. This is the whole point. This is the chiastic structure we've been talking about. And it's going back to the Beatitude. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. When our eyes move out into the world and we touch the hurting places with our love and our resources, open your eyes, look at those in need, and give. Give from the heart. Don't even let the left hand know that you're doing it. When you're pulling up to the stoplight, just pull out your wallet and give the first thing that comes out to the person who's hungry and desperate and in need. Mercy is not dropping a check in an offering plate, right? We're challenged to give completely to those things that compel us into love and righteousness, not just keep some church afloat out of guilt or shame or giving performance. This is why you'll never hear this sermon at church. This is why I serve in the online space. Isn't freedom of the soul the reward we are all really seeking? So, why do we care so much about what others will think? Why do we care so much about what's going to happen? Why don't we just not let the left hand see what the right hand is doing? Maybe it's time we stop performing and become hidden ourselves.